Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's just so nice having football, man. It just hit me during the break. As I read a text, someone saying, as a Texan fan, I found myself being jealous of the Browns' offense last night. I feel dirty and ashamed. My initial reaction was, it was awesome having Thursday night football last night. You know, and we had Thursday night football the previous week, but the Texans were playing, so we were kind of working and watching. It was really nice just to kick your feet up and watch a little football, even if it was too mediocre to bad teams from the state of Ohio. It was cool.
You know what I would say is, and this kind of jibes with what we're talking about in this segment, is that it was also the Cleveland Browns versus the Cincinnati Bengals. Yeah. And I have the full confidence that when the Texans face bad defenses this year, they're going to look pretty good offensively. Mm-hmm. There's enough talent out there that, yeah, versus bad defense. And the Bengals made some improvements, but they were a horrible defense last year. So take it with a grain of salt, just, you know, before you start thinking, oh, wow, the Browns and Baker Mayfield are better than Deshaun Watson. The Texans right now are going through an absolutely brutal stretch, yeah, in terms of the quality of their opponent. All three of these first opponents had good defenses last year. The Chiefs' defense got a lot better as the season went along. The stats don't quite reflect, I think, how good they are. But then the Ravens and the Steelers especially had really good defenses last year. There's no reason really to think why they won't have really good defenses this year. And they're going to take their lumps. Now, it doesn't mean that they have to go 0-3, but you're not going to see peak offensive performance or peak Deshaun Watson out of these teams. Like, a good game for Deshaun Watson versus these teams might end up being a 28-point output, but that means a 28-point output versus the Ravens is like scoring 45 on the Bengals.
Yeah. Honestly, a good Deshaun Watson output against either of these next two teams, Seth, is a clean turnover sheet. Like, if Deshaun, yeah, doesn't fumble or throw interceptions, then I know we cited that stat earlier in the show, Bill O'Brien, 17-1 as the head coach when the Texans don't turn the ball over. I don't want to oversimplify it, because Baltimore and Pittsburgh, and especially Baltimore, they're just really, really talented football teams in all phases of the game. But I feel really good that if Deshaun doesn't throw a pick, if Deshaun doesn't fumble the football, it probably means Deshaun isn't doing things where he's getting outside of himself a little bit. It means that he's staying within himself. And my guess is that those things probably map to fairly consistent stats in the other counting stats that you get during a game.
I almost think, like, if I had to pick one thing that has to happen, it's for one thing to improve. Okay, obviously, like, I feel like tackling is going to improve. It can't be as bad as it was, yeah, part of that. So if there's one thing that might not improve that needs to improve, it's the pass protection, the mental errors in pass protection. I think all of that, if you can fix that to a certain degree, then Deshaun starts looking more like himself. Then he's got a cleaner look at things. Some of the mental errors amongst the receivers, obviously that needs to change. Just so many things on the mental side of things. The offense was not sharp enough to give Deshaun even a chance to have a really good game.
These are what the national experts think of the Houston Texans right now. There are five power rankings that I like to click on each week and just not get into them super granular, but I love seeing where the Texans are, and I love seeing where the AFC South teams are, and certainly this early in the season, no AFC South games in the first four games of the year, but I am curious to see where the first three opponents in particular stack up in these rankings. Again, they're subjective and they're done by big publications. ESPN, SI.com, CBSSports.com, NFL.com, and The Athletic. Seth, the Texans' average rank in those five power rankings is 18th. They're 19, 17, 22, 15th in the NFL.com one is the highest, and then 19th. So they're seen as a slightly below average team right now in these subjective rankings. The three opponents that they played the first three games, Kansas City's number one in all five of them. They're like Alabama or Clemson this year. They're like Clemson. Clemson has all the number one votes. Kansas City is Clemson this year. Baltimore is either two or three, and all of them, except for CBS, they're five, which I find strange. And that leads to their slightly skewed average of their average rank is 2.8, so about third. Pittsburgh is where it starts to get dicey because I think you look at Pittsburgh coming into the season and you go, okay, that won't be a respite necessarily. That won't be a break for the Texans, but it's not a team that's as good as the other two. And their ranking in here isn't indicative of a team that's as good as Kansas City or Baltimore. They still average being ranked sixth by these folks in the power rankings. And that defense, to your point, is amazing. It's a really
good defense. Their defense is very good, and you got to remember, and this is where I've turned into all of a sudden a Ben Roethlisberger defender. 2018 and 2017, in that two-year period, Ben Roethlisberger, there's a stat called Big Time Throws that Pro Football Focus does, and say whatever you want about Pro Football Focus. I like a lot of the things they do. I have objections to a couple. But this Big Time Throw, this is like deep balls into tight windows. Like, holy crap, how did he do that? Ben Roethlisberger led the league over that two-year period in big-time throws. And I think he made a few big-time throws in their win last week. So I very much think that the Steelers are right up there as one of the contenders.
I agree, and it's at Heinz Field, and you're going to be licking your wounds. Maybe if the Texans are 0-2 going into that game, maybe you get a Texans team that feels backed into the corner and sort of a must-win kind of thing. We'll eat what's on our plate now, and that's the Baltimore Ravens. Seth, you brought up something really interesting during the break, and I think it's worth bringing up here when it comes to honest conversations in the building over there. Let's be realistic about this. Like, I think even Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby look at their roster compared to the roster, certainly the first two teams that they're playing, and probably Pittsburgh as well, and look at it and go, okay, well, we just, you know, the material that we have, the team we have, we're not as good as these guys. You know, we're not as good as these guys, but there's a distinct possibility we could start the season 0-3. I think even the most sycophantic inside the building Texan person has to look at the schedule and go, there is a very realistic possibility we're 0-3. Do you think at any point along the power structure that Bill O'Brien, who is the most powerful person that handles football things over there, is there any level within the organization below him where he has realistic conversations like, hey, look at this, guys. You know, let's be realistic and let's make sure we stick together because the early part of the schedule is really, really tough. Like, I don't think he would say that in a million years to the players.
But I feel like
there might be a point in the management chain of coordinators or position coaches where you have to take a big picture look at what is, to me, an historically difficult start to a season.
I think different coaches would approach this differently. But there's that element of you want to be sure that you're eating your own chow. I think that's what they do in the military. Like, be sure you eat your own chow. Like, be sure, like, that, like, whatever motivational stuff you're feeding your troops, you be sure that you're living by it too. So there is that part of it where, like, you want to drink your own Kool-Aid, you know? If you're asking your followers to drink the Kool-Aid, then you better drink it too. But you've got to have contingency plans. Part of being a good leader is having contingency plans. I think what you probably do is you don't speak about it explicitly. I don't think Bill O'Brien gets up in front of his staff and says, hey, look, just in case we start off 0-3, this is how we're going to handle it. But I think you do talk about it because you talk about your team, too, in terms of adversity. Yeah. You know, in terms of, hey, look, you're the best. You can be the best team in the league. And in any given season, you can go through some real rough stretches. And this is how we're going to respond in those situations. So I think that I would guess that O'Brien and most coaches would be sitting down talking with his coordinators or coaches and saying, like, look, you know, we take this one game at a time, but let's be realistic. We got a hell of a stretch of games here at the beginning, and we just got to be sure that if we face any adversity, if there's anything along the way, be sure we got this bunker mentality where guys aren't checking Twitter all the time, guys aren't listening to the haters, all of that, and we need to be sure we're doing that too and coming to work with a positive attitude, not beat them down over every little thing when we just got to be focusing forward. So a vague addressing of the potential issues. Not like we did the other day where we had a little bit of a meeting. We were talking about realistically, how are we going to handle this if after the first game? Sean and I and a couple other people were saying, like, all right, realistically, how's this going to work out if this really goes to pot? Like I'm going to – and mostly I think it was you and a few other people worried about my mental health and, like, whether I'll go crazy or not. So, like, we can have that discussion. We have to talk about it.
Right.
But I think as a coach, you don't go that far down the road.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I'll tell you a story about drinking the Kool-Aid. I remember there was an assistant strength coach in Jacksonville when I was there, and Tom Coughlin was the head coach. Big Kool-Aid guy, right? He loves to dole out the propaganda and the motivational slogans and everything. But this assistant strength coach was a good guy, had options. He's a really well-educated guy. He didn't have to keep making, like, just hardly anything as an assistant strength coach. He was trying to work his way up the ladder, but he also had a family, and he was getting offers from other places, and he wanted to know if he had a contract. Or if he could get a contract, because he didn't even have a contract.
Wow.
So we sat down with Coughlin, and at some point, he said, you know, just basic, good, normal stuff. He said, like, Coughlin was saying, like, hey, listen, don't worry, buddy. You've always got a job with me. And this assistant strength coach says, yeah, I realize that, coach, but, you know, I have to plan for, okay, what if we have a horrible season and we all get fired at the end of the year? And Coughlin says, I'm going to pretend I didn't hear you say that.
Wow, yeah.
Like, yeah, all right, cool, coach, but, like, you're sitting on a five-year guaranteed contract.
Seven
like,
figures.
Are you going to tell me, was your presentation when you got this job, like, I don't want a contract because really it's a year-by-year thing and I plan on winning every single year? Like, right. No. On some level, you gotta cover your ass a little
just
bit.
Just let me coach the first month. I just want to get my foot in the door.
Yeah.
Just let me be the head coach for weeks 1 through 4. I want to get my foot in the door. And I'm going to prove to you.
Part of being a good head football coach, though, is having a little bit of that disconnect.
Delusion.
Like you got to be a little bit of a hypocrite. Like, yeah. you got to kind of expect more out of people than is reasonable. And sometimes that means being a hypocrite, too.
100%. All right. The Texans are going to be making history this weekend over at NRG Stadium, but it will be hopefully the last time they're making this kind of history. It will change in Week 4. We'll tell you what it is next. Lisa Ann will join us for a little fantasy football advice. Seth and I will get on the record between now and the end of the show as to what we think goes down this Sunday, NRG Stadium, 3:25 p.m. Ravens, Texans, getting you ready for that. 713-572-4610. J.J. Watt was asked earlier this week about playing in front of an empty stadium. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, miss having the fans out there. Miss being able to interact with them, feed off of them. I mean, they're the reason we have a job. I mean, if fans don't watch the game, if fans don't show up, you know, we don't have a job. So I'm very thankful to the fans. And I really miss being able to play catch before the games. I mean, to me, that's one of my favorite things about this league is, you know, when I go around the stadium before the game and play catch with a little kid in that front row who showed up 2 hours before the game to have a chance to see the players warm up. I used to be that kid. You know, I went.
All right, so that's J.J. Watt talking about. Yeah, he's right. That is a big part of J.J.'s persona is that interaction with the fans before the game. Seth, I guess he'll just have to toss the ball around with you and me before the game.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. I was like, I'll be the little kid.
Right.
I'll go down. I'll wear like one of those little propeller hats and maybe some knickerbockers, and I'll just be like one of the little rascals down there tossing the old pig. Yeah, bow tie. Tossing the pigskin around. So how can I make my – I'll put some little red freckles on my cheeks.
Yeah.
And
a huge Mr. lollipop, Watt. A gigantic Mr. lollipop in one hand.
with braids.
Yeah.
Like those curly braids, like right. When they used to do the boys up, like little
right. Yeah. An oversized lollipop in one hand and a receiver glove on the other hand. JJ, it is gonna
not braids. What am I thinking? You remember back in the day, like the early 1900s?
Yeah, I'm like, what are you Amish or something? Or
no, they used to like curl their hair and make them look like little dolls, the little boys in these pictures. It was creepy. It was really
sounds
weird.
Like a horrible time in our history. Jeez. that
yeah, that was the worst thing that was going on in the, in the early 1900s. Yeah.
Hairstyles. So JJ, fortunately for JJ Watt, he will not have to endure an empty stadium going forward. It will be empty this Sunday against the Ravens, week two. However, in week four, it was announced yesterday that the Texans are working with city and county officials to have up to 15,000 fans in the stadium for week four against the Vikings. Here's Texans president Jamie Roots.
This entity, the Houston Texans, it means a lot to our community. It means a lot to our fans, and particularly the fans that will be coming out to this game. Their life and their minds wouldn't be the same without it. And so we do feel a responsibility to get it right, but we also see ourselves as the caretakers of a community asset. You know, we only want people to come who want to come. I mean, this is your decision. We're making it available because it just feels right when there is a big group of the population that wants to participate in this. It's really our responsibility to do our level best to make it available to them and make it safe for them to participate.
Seth, do you think they get 15,000 people at that Minnesota game?
Oh, yeah.
The reason I ask is Jacksonville, and I know it's Jacksonville, granted, they did not sell out their allotment of tickets that they could have had in people in the stadium. I think they only had like 11,000 people in the stadium.
Shut up.
No, I'm serious.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I think that – I'm pretty sure.
Okay, now
you got me questioning myself on it. Now I got to
No, go. That's amazing. I didn't even know that that would that it never entered my mind that you wouldn't sell out a limited quantity
well,
of supply
one, they're,
of tickets.
They're a bad football team. The Texans, yeah, I don't think, yeah. The Texans are 0-1 and they played poorly, but I don't think they're a bad football team. And Jacksonville's not the most passionate of fan bases either.
Well, it's a very small city. Excuse me while I defend Jacksonville for a little bit. It's a very, very small, it's population-wise, it's small, but then that's spread out over a large area, too. It doesn't have a whole bunch of suburbs surrounding it or anything. So it's so there's that. But I'm just surprised you had to find 15,000. I suppose the thought of going to a stadium that's only 20% full, and especially that stadium, it's a huge stadium. I could see where maybe the appeal isn't quite the same. I'm just shocked. I thought all these places would sell out 15,000.
Now I got to go look and make sure I wasn't just seeing somebody joking on Twitter or something like that.
That was a very good chance.
I thought I saw it from a reputable source. By the way, your Jaguar is showing right now. Look at you sticking up for Jackson.
I think that, and then the Colts are adding fans too. I think it's important to remember that the problem with sports and disease transmission is that you have so many people compressed so tight together. And we're learning more and more about, okay, this thing called viral load. The more actual, like, it matters how much of the virus is trying to make its way into your body. And when it's huge concentrations in very close areas, it's just, there's simply a much higher chance that you're going to transmit the virus. When you spread everybody out, when you wear masks, when you do all these things, it reduces the chances, obviously. And I think in a stadium, as large as a stadium is, I feel like it's a safer proposition to have 20% capacity in a stadium than it is to have 20% capacity in a restaurant,
yeah,
or various other places. And even whether there's a roof on it or not, in many respects, a stadium is an outdoor environment just by sheer volume of air. The viral load isn't so concentrated in your face. That I'm just, if it's, I really feel like whatever the standards are for restaurants and whatnot, that's what it should be for stadiums.
Yeah, well, what about when they get into fights, like this video that I'm looking at from last night's Browns game where there's a bunch of Browns fans beating the dog crap out of each other? Is that unsafe, Seth, do you think?
I forgot how safe fighting was before the coronavirus. Yeah, that's, I guess.
Are you
I guess
more scared of brain damage or the COVID? If you get into a fight with somebody.
I forgot that getting dumped over three rows of bleachers onto your head to a hard concrete step was
totally,
was totally safe.
Totally safe in non-COVID times, absolutely. And by the way, the most 2020 phrase that's been used in just that last couple minutes there was, here, Sean, the problem with sports and disease transmission is .. Those are sentences that are being said with straight faces on sports talk shows. Let's go to the phone, 713-572-4610. Larry in Stafford. Larry, what's going on? Long time no talk, my friend.
Hey, it's good to hear you boys, man. Sean, Seth, look, hey, I'm going to get into a couple of things, and I'll try to hit them fast, man. It's going to be an easy 15,000 people that want to go to that Minnesota game, because that's what Texans fans, we love football. So they can say 15,000 to 20,000, and I'm sure it would be sold out in a heartbeat. Yeah. Now, having said that, Sean, I think sometimes, and maybe it's my own in my own brain. I think my calls frustrate a lot of people, and especially a lot of people sitting over there on Kirby, because they think that I hate the Texans for some silly-ass reason, when I know in my heart and soul the Texans run through my blood like I can't even explain to people how much I love the Texans. And I think Bill O'Brien and the Easter Bunny, they sit over there and they say, don't you listen to that Larry and Stafford, because all he's going to do is just be angry and loud. But it's that passion, and it's what I feel, and I don't get that same return coming back from the squad. And so then that's what makes me upset. And so when I think about what you guys was talking about, how the Texans may be people that can sit in that conference room over there and look at something on a whiteboard, and then you go out on the field and they play like they still looking at the whiteboard. I used to be a salesman for GTE MobileNet. And when I would go into those sales meetings, man, I would sit in there and I'd listen at these professional salespeople tell me, well, this is a telco cell phone and you need to be able to do this, 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 and this to be able to meet your quota of sales, right? And I'd listen to them and they'd be giving me this spiel and all this other stuff. And the next thing I know, I'd be in my car driving straight to the barbershop and selling 35 cell phones. Because I'm not listening that you try to tell me how to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to go out there and put my plan of action to work. So that's what it is. It's a difference in listening to somebody on a whiteboard say, hey, X here, move here, versus you go out there and saying, if this fool come on my left side, I'm going to drive his ass all the way to the sideline. And that brings me to my point of dominance. In 2011, the Houston Texans offensive line with Dwayne Brown, Mike Brazil, Rozier, Eric Winston, Chris Myers, and Wade Smith, they were dominant. You could see it. And that is what Texan fans are looking for from this offensive line and this offense, is to be dominant. Because when they were dominant, that means Arian Foster and Andre Johnson were dominant. And so what we haven't seen, and going to Seth's point about precision, we haven't seen that kind of dominance or precision out of Bill O'Brien and that offense in 7 years. And we consistently, and that is why we continue to stay on this roller coaster ride with Bill O'Brien. And I'll let y'all go with this. It's like me. I've waited 20 years to go get me a Corvette, right? And it's a 2020 Corvette, and it's an inline motor, and the muffler in the back is loud, and I'm just excited. As soon as I go to get in the car, my wife says she want to drive it. That is a frustrating experience that I am not going to allow. And I don't know if y'all understand what I'm saying is, if you got something that's dominant, use it and let it be dominant. They got a quarterback over there that could win football games. Now it's time for the rest of it to match up in our hall.
That's a good call, Larry. And Larry, I believe that your decibel level does come from passion. I truly believe that. I do believe Larry loves the Texans. If Larry didn't love the Texans, he wouldn't be calling. And, you know, that sometimes you want people who are a little angry about things. It's better than apathy, that's for sure. Seth, I would give anything to buy some cell phones from Larry. That would have been, those would have been some interesting sales calls to be on.
Good call, Larry. And to tidy this thing up, Sean, the Jaguars announced attendance was 14,100. They were supposed to allow 25% of capacity.
Yeah.
For them, that would have worked out to 16,800.
So they were short
in attendance. Apparently, yeah, I don't know for sure because I don't want to. I can't find an article that explicitly states that there were 2,000 no shows.
Yeah.
That's just some calculations I've seen.
I was right. I don't know.
I found like a whole bunch of jokes about how, hey, the Jaguars are second in the league in attendance. They were one of two teams that allowed fans in the stands. So this is the only time that they were second in the league in attendance.
It does lend itself to jokes, that's for sure. And that's my fear is that I may have seen a joke come across my radar, but I appreciate you fact checking that. That's good. So if you want to get in, 713-572-4610. Actually, we have Lisa Ann coming up in the next segment, so I would tell you to get ready to get some fantasy football advice. If you have some advice that you need or questions that you want to text in, 713-572-4610. If you got quick hitter start 'em, sit 'ems, we usually run through, you know, a half dozen or so of those, so we'll pick the good ones off the top that are most relevant to the football world. So Lisa Ann, our fantasy football expert, next. Seth and I will get on the record, too, with what we think happens this Sunday between now and the top of the hour. We roll on what's been a fun Football Friday here, presented by Carbach Hoppadillo IPA on Sports Radio 610. Stay there. It is Payne and Pendergast with you, Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne, Sports Radio 610. It's Football Friday presented by Carbach Hopadillo IPA. Before we get to Lisa Ann and some fantasy football advice, just real quick from Bill O'Brien's press conference, which is ongoing. His Friday press conference, which usually is not very news or noteworthy response heavy. The Friday one is usually kind of sort of the final tune-up press conference-wise, but this is a bit of news that Duke Johnson is trending in the right direction to be playing on Sunday. So I think that's worth noting. I don't know how high Duke Johnson is on fantasy football players' big boards, but the Texans, if they're going to beat the Ravens on the actual football field, not in fantasy world, are certainly going to need all of their guns a-blazing on Sunday against this Baltimore Ravens defense, and Duke Johnson a big part of that. As we go to the hotline right now, and good to be joined by our friend and fantasy football expert, Lisa Ann. Lisa, happy week two to you. How are you?
Happy week two. What a great game we got to enjoy last night. I went into the night thinking like, oh, Bengals-Browns, how exciting can this be? It ended up being exciting.
Yeah, 35-30. You don't even need to look at the box score. You just see the final score. You go, man, this is a fantasy football player's dream right here. Is Joe Burrow going to be kind of a sneaky 3-touchdown in garbage time fantasy quarterback this year?
Yeah, you know, we don't know. I have him tucked away on my bench in quite a few leagues just because I really didn't want anybody else to have him, and I felt that he had the potential. I mean, he's such a patient quarterback for such a young player. I love to watch him play. He's definitely going to make the NFL and the Bengals really watchable this season. This consistency is something we're going to watch. Seeing A.J. Green go out there, I benched A.J. Green last night because I felt like, okay, after just coming back to play, after missing so much time and having this short recovery of Sunday play, Thursday night play, he's going to go on my bench. That's okay with me. But I love what A.J. Green and Joe Burrow have put together. I love that he's using the rookie Higgins. I just think, you know, they're going to be a surprisingly fun team to watch. And Baker getting his act together was great for him and great for Odell because we don't need any more bad press for the Cleveland Browns.
No.
Lisa, the Texans will face the Ravens this week, obviously. One of the rookies getting a whole lot of buzz is J.K. Dobbins, who had a good game last week. I guess the problem with Dobbins is you might get really excited about him, but the Ravens seem committed to playing each of their three running backs like almost exactly 33% of the snaps. Is there any? Do you get any feel that one of these guys might actually emerge as a bell cow in Baltimore?
I really don't. I think it's going to be exactly what you said. It's going to be a shared backfield, and you're going to be playing him. You're going to be playing them and grinding your teeth each time it's not J.K. Dobbins, right? So, yes, I think J.K. Dobbins is a great own on your bench to see if an injury does present itself or maybe he starts to get more of the workload. But for right now, it looks pretty evenly split. And that doesn't make you a win in fantasy.
Lisa Ann joining us for some fantasy football advice. Lisa, I think one of the big stories out of week one was some of the performances, maybe good and bad, from some of the old guard among the quarterbacks. Is Aaron Rodgers, is this drafting of Jordan Love that we thought might send Aaron Rodgers into a funk, is this actually going to send him on a killing rampage all year long? He looked pretty good in week one against a good defense.
Man, I can only hope so. As a proud owner of Devontae Adams, it was a good look to see all those points on my fantasy squads, right? But this is what Aaron Rodgers talked about in a recent interview. He talked about the fact that during quarantine, he went back and watched his own tape from 5 years ago. He studied his footwork. He understood what new habits he had gotten into, some of them being bad habits. And I think really having that downtime was probably so valuable to Aaron Rodgers to observe, right? Can he keep this up with MVS? That would be awesome. He's got Lazard there. This was a good push for Aaron Rodgers, right? Seeing them draft another quarterback was a good way to say, oh, wow, my time could be ticking. I need to market myself if I'm going to leave this team and expect big money somewhere else.
Lisa, which aging quarterback should you be most concerned about at this point, Drew Brees or Tom Brady?
I want to say Tom Brady. I mean, I don't love that Drew Brees is dealing with Michael Thomas having an injury, but I want to say Tom Brady because if you watch how that line did not protect him, it just buckled under pressure. Seeing defenders who are supposed to be watching Brady's back and Brady's watching them just get knocked over and then he's getting pummeled, that's not good for any quarterback, and it's especially not good for a 43-year-old quarterback. So there's that. I also think Brady is already in a pickle with the fact that Mike Evans has a hamstring. Chris Godwin is on concussion protocol. Gronk looked a little bit slower. Happy to see O.J. Howard get in the end zone. He's my kind of sweet tight end in Tampa that I think Tom Brady can make a star out of. But I just don't think the team – yes, Tom has been able to work with his receivers on the offseason, but I don't think the team had enough time to really mesh, understand, and communicate. So I'm more worried about Tom Brady.
All right. So, yeah, Lisa, I know that you thought Scotty Miller on Tampa Bay, he was a super sleeper for you. I know that because you sent that to me right before my draft, like, hey, Scotty Miller. And I got Scotty Miller. With Godwin dealing with an injury, with Evans dealing with a hamstring, you could see Brady maybe working that Edelman portion of the field a little bit more, right?
Agreed. And not only with those injuries, the fact that Tom Brady doesn't have enough time to set up a play, he has no freedom in the pocket. So Scotty Miller can get something done for him quick so he can release the ball and save himself from being hit.
Yeah.
You know what, Lisa, I'm glad you brought up the offensive line in Tampa, because it's actually a good segue into Cam Newton. Because one of the things that the New England Patriots had going him forever was one of the best offensive line coaches in history, Dante Scarnecchia. Dante Scarnecchia retired for a little bit a couple years ago, and their offensive line fell apart. And then he came back, and all of a sudden the Patriots are winning Super Bowls again. So Dante Scarnecchia obviously is not in Tampa. Dante Scarnecchia is not in New England, but Belichick went and got Cam Newton, a quarterback who for years has made offensive linemen look better than they actually are because he's such a threat as a runner. It makes it easier for offensive linemen because there's so much indecision in the mind of the defense, and there's one more gap that the defenses have to worry about when you've got a running quarterback. And because of that, I'm just sitting here wondering, Is Cam Newton going to be – I thought he might be good this year, but if he stays healthy, could he end up being way, way better than we anticipated?
He could, but, you know, we're looking at fresh legs right now. Let's get to week 4 or week 5 after Cam's been banged around a bit and see if he really wants to take all of these runs. I mean, right now he's feeling himself, right? He's going to go out there and throw himself at it. But I think they'll have to simmer that back a bit, and I think that's going to affect him. Cam's got a much more realistic matchup this week facing Seattle. I love the fact that everybody overlooked Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing 3 interceptions against the Patriots last week because all we wanted to talk about was Cam Newton. And the reality was the Dolphins aren't that good. Let's put Cam in a couple other situations and evaluate the line. Let's evaluate how much he runs. And let's see if he actually allows his running backs to get any of the work, or if he's just going to vulture everything for himself until he no longer can.
Lisa Ann joining us for some fantasy football advice. If you want to text in 713-572-4610, we always rapid fire a few of your texts towards the end of the segment. Lisa, I want to circle back to Drew Brees and Michael Thomas and the Saints. Michael Thomas out with the injury. How concerning is this injury, one? And number two, is there anybody on the Saints that you look to step up that might be either available, or if somebody's got one of the Saints' other pass catchers on their roster, it becomes a much more must start this week?
It is Emmanuel Sanders time, everybody. That's right. If you were smart enough, believe it or not, I handcuffed Emmanuel Sanders to Michael Thomas in leagues because I wanted to have him as trade bait. I looked at it like, hey, someone's going to want shares of this offense. This way, if Michael Thomas is double covered, I can trade and get rid of Emmanuel Sanders. I will be playing Emmanuel Sanders. Also, Jared Cook has an opportunity to really step up, right? You're going to see a lot more going to Jared Cook. This injury does concern me. The fact that Michael Thomas didn't even want to be evaluated after the game let me know that he knows this is a high ankle sprain. He knows it's going to take time to recover. And that's just a bummer for Drew Brees. And it's a bummer for all of us who drafted Michael Thomas in the first round. But if Emmanuel Sanders is available, you've got to play him.
Lisa, how about Washington's defense in week 1, setting up their offense? I know they scored 27 points, but I think all their scoring drives took place or started on the Philadelphia side of the field. Look, we know Chase Young, second overall pick, really good player. That pass rush in Washington, though, pretty fearsome. Well, how do you evaluate this week? They go to Arizona this week to take on a Cardinals team where DeAndre Hopkins had a boatload of catches, and I'm sure Kyler Murray is a guy who's seen as a must-start by a lot of folks. But this Washington defense might be a little more stout than maybe coming into the year we thought they might be.
I completely agree. You know, we've been so distracted by talking about the changing of the name and everything going on in Washington, but did we really forget about Chase Young? I think he's going to be all over Kyler Murray, who is not a big guy, right? He's going to be all over Kyler Murray this week, and it was a shock. I mean, think about that game, and the Colts broke up like 80% of survivor pools, right, for the season because nobody saw this coming. We did forget about Chase Young. This is going to be a pass rush to fear for sure.
All right, a couple things before we let you go, Lisa. We'll hit a few texts here, but before we let you go, are there any sleepers or any pickups you made this week? There's still some leagues, I'm sure, that have some waiver wire pickups to do. Any recommendations for people you've been picking up in some of your bigger leagues guys and gals might be able to go out and go get?
So week one, I tend to really sit tight, right? I had some injuries. I have them tucked away on IR because a lot of us opened up the IR spots more this year with COVID. I don't like to make a crazy amount of moves because when you look at the risk factor of not seeing enough tape, right? 1 week with no preseason, every player is fresh and every player is out there preaching. This is why we don't want preseason. We play so much better without those four games. Da, 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 da. So I think you got to really sit tight and don't give away players that you believed in just 2 weeks ago in the draft. Now, if you're talking about Kerryon Johnson, yeah, let him go. He's got no value, right? But if you didn't pick up Frank Gore, you should. If you didn't pick up Adrian Peterson, he's out there, you should. But those are your couple of players out there. Tony Pollard is still available in leagues, and he shared a lot of work with Zeke last week, and I think they'll continue to do that in Dallas. So if Tony Pollard is out there, but really be patient with your team the first 2 to 3 weeks. After week two, you can really start to see who's been dropped, and really following the waiver wire moves that your league mates make can be more valuable than jumping to make your own moves, because sometimes your league mates will quit on a player that they shouldn't have quit on yet. And if you're studying those reports every week, you can make some monster pickups without everybody even noticing.
That's good advice. The early move might be no move at this point in the season. Lisa Ann joining us. All right, Lisa, let's rapid fire a few of these. We're getting a lot of, I'm glad people are asking about this because it's relevant to the local fan base here. We're getting a lot of should I play Deshaun Watson this week, which sounds crazy because I'm sure he was one of the first two or three quarterbacks drafted in most leagues, but they play the Baltimore Ravens. We're getting a lot of Watson or Brady, Watson or Josh Allen. What do you think about Deshaun Watson here in week two?
You got to play Deshaun Watson. He's still going to put up points for you in fantasy. He's not going to surrender. He's going to continue to fight back. Whether you win or lose, he's going to throw for his 3 or 4 touchdowns. That's what he's going to have to do to stay competitive. And what you all know in Houston about Deshaun Watson is he's competitive. So you do not bench your quarterback that you probably picked up as either the top 3 or 4 quarterback off the draft board.
Yeah, that's good advice. Lisa, Michael Gallup against the Falcons or Stephon Diggs against Miami in a flex position?
Man, I love Gallup because I think Atlanta's, you know, both teams, Atlanta and the Dallas Cowboys, really faulty defense. There's going to be a high-scoring affair. I like Diggs as well, but I don't love his quarterback as much, so I'm going Gallup in this one.
All right, another guy in a PPR league, flex position here, Todd Gurley going against Dallas, Stephon Diggs, or Will Fuller against the Baltimore Ravens?
You got to go Fuller. He's hot, you know, and he's going to be out there. So Deshaun Watson, trust him. That relationship is solid. I'm going Fuller.
I almost feel like if you have Fuller, it's like, man, enjoy it while you can, because it's only going to be like 9 games. Yeah.
You smoke them while you got them.
All right, couple more here, Lisa. Jonnu Smith or Hayden Hurst?
Hayden Hurst this week. Dallas does allow points to the opposing tight end, so go for Hayden Hurst.
All right, we're getting one here. DJ Chark or Will Fuller?
Man, I love what Gardner Minshew put together last week. 19 out of 20. Boy, just went out there with that mullet and got it done. I mean, Jacksonville's supposed to be tanking, and they did not give the memo to Minshew at all. So I still want to go Fuller here, but, you know, DJ Chark is the only show in town for Gardner Minshew. So you got to look at that matchup and see how you feel. I should say Fuller.
Yeah.
Lisa, I feel like Gardner Minshew has a certain charisma about him and a certain look about him. I feel like he'd be good in a certain niche of acting. Does he have that vibe to you?
Oh my gosh, yes. He could be in every like rom-com where there's potentially a weird bar fight or like Dude, Where's My Car? Like, you know, like random movies that are like all the bad things that can happen to you in one day, and Gardner Minshew's the lead. I love his swagger. I really do. And I love being on a team that just has nothing and getting it done. His efficiency is unbelievable, and I just want to see if he can keep it up. But his whole mullet, his mustache, I dig it. I dig all of it. I dig it.
Last one, Lisa, for someone who's obviously in a league with six teams, Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers?
Oh, my God. These questions, right? You're like, really? You can't bench Russell Wilson. I mean, no. Detroit has a decent – you can't bench I'm sorry, Aaron Rodgers. Detroit has a decent defense, but – I still trust New England and knock around Russell Wilson a little bit. So, yeah, Aaron Rodgers, yeah. Go for the hot hand.
There you go. Yeah, they're both the hot hand right now. They both were incredible in week one. Lisa Ann, our fantasy football expert, joining us in her segment with us here on Fridays. Lisa, great stuff as always. Good luck. Enjoy the games. We'll talk next week.
You got it. You guys enjoy the games as well. Have a great weekend.
All right, thanks. Lisa Ann joining us on the program. Good stuff as always. All right, Seth, let's do this. We got to get on the record. The formula for the Texans to beat the Ravens, or do they beat the Ravens? My goal at the beginning of the show was to talk myself into picking the Texans, or have you talk me into picking the Texans by the end of the show. Where are you with this matchup right now?
If I were gambling, I would bet on the Texans to cover. I am not there yet where I can bet on the Texans to actually beat the Ravens. But I am going to say it's going to be a better defensive showing than people expect, and it's going to be a more competitive game than people expect. And frankly, call me a loser all you want. I'll take the moral victory in just actually showing up and competing versus a good team this week. Then the bar gets raised the next week. But I've got the Texans losing 28-24.
Okay, well, that would be an exciting game for sure. I think the only things I can pull from to where I feel the Texans have a chance in this game are they're more trends or historical records, things like that, like the things we cited earlier about how good the Texans have been, like not just good, but exceedingly good, better than the average when they don't turn the ball over, when they win the turnover battle, when they play a clean game. The other thing I will say, Seth, is that Bill O'Brien, since Deshaun Watson has gotten here, has kind of become famous for a couple of things, or his teams have, and by proxy, he as the head coach has become famous for one of two things: either following up an amazing performance with a really bad performance, they did that a lot last year, or following up a really bad performance with a performance that is a bounce back. They are a bit of a yo-yo kind of team. And for that reason, I do think they're going to compete as well. I don't think it's going to be as lopsided as I felt like it was going to be earlier in the week, but I'm with you. I'm taking the Ravens in this game 34-28. So the Texans do cover by half a point or a point, depending on what sports book you're doing your business at these days. Seth, I hope we're wrong.
Who's this
is Anita Baker.
Oh, okay.
Caught up in
well, listen, Anita. I think Anita would support me. Look, if I'm predicting 28-24, that's indeed a one-score game, and nobody's been better at one-score games than Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson together. Yeah. If they can just keep it close, they got a shot in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, let's let Anita sing here.
Caught up in the rapture of O'Brien.
Who do you think Anita Baker would prefer to go out with, you or me?
I would say whichever one has the less STD-ish nickname.
I think you've got a smoother personality.
You think?
I think you'd be like, hey, Anita, why don't we just go get to...
Would it be weird if I started playing her music when it came to panty dropping time? Yeah. Would that be strange? Because this is one of those songs.
Yeah. You would smooth talk her. Meanwhile, I'd be like, holy crap, you're Anita Baker. That's so cool.
Seth, yeah. Antibodies to you. I will see you for the pregame at 12:25 on Sunday, my friend.
Antibodies, T-cells, and keeping it real to you.
There it is. All right. Let's remind the folks, too, that if you want to get into the Pick'em contest, Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Compete against me and hosts all over the country, and you can win $1,000 this week. Go to radio.com/picks. Have a good one, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.